This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, March 14th, Pi Day of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear about efforts throughout the state to make opioid reversal drugs more accessible and readily available. And atmospheric rivers can now be ranked globally like hurricanes for their intensity and duration. That story and more on This Week in Water. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth? On this week's science show, the Fun Drive Edition Science Show, we'll hear about the role of trees in the fate of human civilization. At 9 a.m., tune in for another archival recording of British philosopher Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, we're going to ask you to call in to 303-449-4885 or go online to kgnu.org. And now, the headlines with KGNU's John Callen.
Former Representative Pat Schroeder, the pioneering advocate for women's rights and family rights, died in Florida last night at the age of 82. Schroeder served Colorado in the U.S. House of Representatives for 24 years and is being remembered as a trailblazing leader. Pat Schroeder was first elected to Congress in 1972 and over the next nearly 2.5 decades became an influential member. In one major achievement, she championed the Family and Medical Leave Act of 1993, which protected the jobs of those taking time off to care for a newborn, a sick child, or a parent. In a 1992 interview with KGNU, a year before the act passed, Representative Schroeder explained why it was so important.
All the work and family issues impact on women the most because women are the caregivers in most families. And we have a workplace that just doesn't recognize caregiver roles at all. In fact, you're penalized if you have to be a caregiver.
Schroeder earned a degree from Harvard Law School and after leaving Congress became a law professor at Princeton University. Governor Jared Polis said Pat Schroeder broke barriers with her leadership. A former press secretary said she recently suffered a stroke and died in a hospital in Celebration, Florida. Gun safety advocates in Colorado are hailing the approval of three bills by the state Senate. The lawmakers passed Senate Bills 23-168, 169, and 170 yesterday. 168, if it becomes law, would help to hold the gun industry accountable in cases where their actions contribute to gun violence. Senate Bill 169 would raise the minimum age to buy a firearm to 21, and Senate Bill 170 would strengthen Colorado's extreme risk protection law, which in its current form allows family members or law enforcement to get a court order preventing someone from having a gun if it poses a risk to themselves or others. The Colorado chapters of Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action issued a statement applauding lawmakers for advancing these three measures. They also applauded the approval by the state House of a bill that would establish a 3-day waiting period to buy a firearm in Colorado. The bill is now headed to the state Senate after passing the House on Saturday by a 44-20 vote. The bill passed in spite of a more than 16-hour Republican-led filibuster. That filibuster also failed to stop a bill that would allow local governments to establish overdose prevention centers. Republicans have vowed to continue their opposition to both House measures, especially the firearms purchase waiting period bill, which they say violates Second Amendment rights. A bill that would set a national precedent by establishing substance-free seating at large events in Colorado is expected to go before state lawmakers this week. If approved and signed into law, sporting events and concert venues that seat more than 7,000 people would have to designate 4% of their seating capacity to substance-free seating. In those areas, tobacco, alcohol, and other substances would not be allowed. If it becomes law, it would be the first of its kind in the United States. Two grants totaling more than $1.9 million are meant to help Colorado address the ongoing opioid crisis. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has the story.
The Colorado Opioid Abatement Council, or COAC, approved the funding yesterday for 6 organizations to combat Colorado's opioid crisis. According to Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, who is also the chair of the COAC, said in a press release the money will go toward prevention, harm reduction, criminal justice, and treatment with a focus on underserved communities. The council approved programs in Arapahoe County Public Health, Boys and Girls Club of Chaffee County in Buena Vista, Valley Hope Association in Douglas County, and the Thornton Police Department. COAC plans to award another $3.2 million in grants for infrastructure in a second funding cycle later this year. Any state agency, regional opioid abatement council, or participating local governments can apply. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
The State House also passed two bills that would support Colorado workers. House Bills 1094 and 1074 were both approved by wide margins yesterday. 1094 would modify the state's agricultural workforce development program by doubling the length of paid internships from 6 months to up to 1 year. House Bill 1074 would create a workforce study aimed at industries in transition because of automation and help Coloradans prepare for high-demand careers of the future. All that heavy snowfall in the mountains this winter is giving Colorado its best snowpack in years. The National Resources Conservation Service says that as of yesterday, the snowpack is at 105% of its median peak level. Barring an unusually heavy melting in the next few weeks, the state will enjoy its first above-average snowpack since the winter of 2018-2019. The news wasn't all good. The Arkansas River Basin is below its season-to-date level, but the snowpack has greatly reduced drought conditions in the high country. In today's weather, we're expecting mostly sunny skies with highs along the Front Range around 60 degrees. In Boulder, expect a high of 59 degrees. In Denver, it could reach 64 degrees, and in Fort Collins, 61 degrees. A little cooler up in Nederland with a high of 42 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young, and we are in our spring fun drive, but you already knew that. And I want to thank Anne Marie, who donated online at kgnu.org. She is a solar member and wanted to give some more during the spring fun drive. And she's been a member since 1979. Well, Anne Marie, thank you very much. Thank you for your continued and constant membership over the decades, but also for giving a little bit more during this hour, because during the morning news block, we do have that 600 challenge grant. That 600 challenge grant that is available to anybody who wants to call in at 303-449-4885 or go online like Anne Marie and make a secure online donation. It helps to double the amount. It's very, very useful to us. So I don't know when the next challenge, when the next challenge grant is going to be on the table, but I encourage you to snap this one up while it is available. It's quick, it's easy. Give us a call, go online.
You know, KGNU, I think, deserves a raise. Now, you want to say a raise, maybe you shouldn't be working here anymore. Now, but remember, there's been inflation. Costs of everything are going up, and costs to KGNU are not an exception to that. We pay what everybody else pays. And when's the last time you gave us a raise? This is the moment to update your KGNU membership. If you are a solar member, I hope you are. I am. I enjoy being a solar member. And from time to time, I will reassess how much I'm giving and add a little bit to it. And I would suggest that you take a look and survey your record. Maybe it's time KGNU got a raise from you. 303-449-4885 is the number.
Yes, thank you to Anne Marie. We're going to move on to our next news segment. Due to the threat of fentanyl poisoning throughout the state, harm reduction groups are making the medication naloxone hydrochloride more accessible. In rural Colorado, Maggie Seldin helms the Roaring Fork-based nonprofit High Rockies Harm Reduction. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KDNK's Haddison Rensberry asks her about some common misconceptions about naloxone, also known by its brand name, Narcan.
Some really common misconceptions that we hear about naloxone are, one, that it's not safe. That is, for some reason, a common thing we hear, that for some reason naloxone is not safe. There, I think, tends to be a somewhat linguistic confusion when we talk about naloxone or Narcan and its use in reversing opioid overdoses, that people connect that drug itself to a narcotic. But naloxone is not a narcotic. It's not psychoactive, and it has no known side effects. Any side effects from receiving naloxone are related to being dependent on opioids or the loss of oxygen and the medical event that you experienced that led to you receiving naloxone. It is safe. It's very, very safe. It's so safe that the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment and the CDC fully endorses and allows everyone in the state to carry it and use it, even if it's expired, free from liability. Another common misconception we're hearing out there today is that there are opioids that are resistant to Narcan or naloxone. Now, there's a lot of things that happen in the illicit drug landscape that complicate this issue. We talk a lot about fentanyl, and fentanyl is only one highly lethal contaminant. So we see a lot of deaths from it because it's so lethal. But drugs can be cut with any number of opioids or benzos or tranquilizers or white powdery substances. And so a common trend we're starting to see across the country is now xylazine, which is a tranquilizer, also being cut into drugs. And naloxone will not work on that because it only works on opioids, which are a specific class of sedative. So it won't work on other sedatives like tranquilizers or benzodiazepines. But naloxone, in any of its forms, will work on any opioid overdose.
You mentioned in some of your trainings that if you have opioids in the house, that you should probably have naloxone in the house. Do you want to speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, there is a law in Colorado that states that pharmacists are required to talk to patients about naloxone when dispensing opioid-based medications, comma, if they think it's relevant, which I've never seen happen. I've never seen a pharmacist or a doctor talk to somebody about naloxone with their opioid medication. And yet this is literally the cure to the poison that you're receiving. I think most of us know at this point that opioids, even when you get them from your doctor, are habit-forming and lethal in pretty moderate doses. And prior to 2021, in Garfield County and in Colorado on a whole, the majority of overdoses were due to prescription drugs. Most overdoses happen in the home. When we train students across the state on how to use Narcan, from college students all the way down to middle school, there's a lot of pushback about doing that for a lot of interesting reasons. But for me, the most likely event, and the event that we've seen happen over and over in communities across the state, is that a younger sibling or family member finds someone who has overdosed. And that is what happens in the majority of overdoses, whether it's from OxyContin prescriptions, fentanyl, heroin. It usually happens in the home, and it's usually a friend or family member who finds them. Because I think most of us have seen that at some point in our friend or family groups, someone who is touched by drug or alcohol addiction. In the same way that we teach students to use AEDs, to provide CPR, we want people to be prepared to provide first aid if they feel comfortable to do so. It's not, they don't have to, but we would love for them to call 911. We would love for them to know what this looks like. The majority of opioid use disorders start with a prescription in the home. We want families to have the tools to protect themselves. Some people out there are kind of born first responders and really want to be prepared in the event of an emergency, because overdoses don't necessarily happen instantaneously. People will generally like slip into them, and they could use in one location and go into the store, the gas station, the library, a park, a school, whatever, and then slip into an overdose. And so it's definitely something I think a lot of people who are passionate about this issue, yeah, want to be prepared, especially if you are someone who goes to a lot of concerts or events. I personally love having it in every pocket on my person, and every kind of the same way if you carry lighters or things like that, that you like have one in every coat. I really like that because it is truly fentanyl poisonings that are driving the true relevance of this. And again, meaning people who use cocaine recreationally or MDMA recreationally or meth recreationally, all of these people can potentially be exposed to fentanyl in a very small amount, can be lethal, and we have less time to respond than in a traditional opioid overdose. It can be as little as 3 minutes without oxygen before someone experiences cardiac arrest from a fentanyl overdose. That's also why myself at High Rockies Harm Reduction and CDPHE and all the folks involved in these efforts, local law enforcement, public health, everybody, we just want this everywhere and as close within reach as possible so that when this happens, you can respond as quickly as you can.
Maggie Seldin with High Rockies Harm Reduction speaking with KDNK's Haddison Rensberry. That interview came to us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio, which is an organization that we're a member of as community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, New Mexico, Utah. It's a great network, and I think you probably have heard several contributions from that network. I want to thank Dave Anderson. He donated online. He says his favorite show is Democracy Now! Dave, thank you so much for helping us to get to our goal and also to pick up that challenge grant. We appreciate you and we are going to keep doing what we do. So thank you so much for your support. I encourage you to give us a call now, 303-449-4885. We are waiting for your donation. We have a $300 goal to meet in 8 minutes. 8 minutes. So please help us out here. And we want to get to our next piece, but do you have something to say, Joel?
I think KGNU is worth supporting. And we're worth supporting in part because we don't have commercial advertising. That's not how we cover our costs. We cover our costs by the voluntary contributions that you give. And we're not only saving ourselves from the obnoxious commercial advertising, it's the influence that that advertising has over what we can broadcast on KGNU. How is it that we have a labor exchange? Nobody else in Colorado has a labor exchange show. They have business shows. We have a labor show because of your contributions to KGNU. We couldn't do what we do without your participation, and that's why we're asking you right now. We have the only show produced by the queer community here in Colorado. We were recognized by Out Boulder County, in fact, for that. How is it that we can do that when, it used to be very controversial. Now it's hard to say what's controversial these days. But we can do what we do because we have the support of our loyal listeners. And nobody can turn us away from serving our loyal listeners. Be a loyal listener. Show your loyalty by calling 303-449-4885 or going online to kgnu.org.
Up next, we have our weekly segment on water, which, of course, is of relevance to any human on the planet. That's This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
100 Days of Solitude Under the Sea. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A strong atmospheric river caused heavy rain last week in many parts of California and brought more snow to higher elevations. The forecast was for another storm to hit the state early this week.
This latest atmospheric river was the 10th this winter. In some areas, heavy rain fell onto thick snow, making it dangerously heavy for structures and bringing the possibility of avalanches.
Atmospheric rivers are long regions in the sky that transport water vapor from the tropics and carry an amount of moisture roughly the equivalent of the average flow at the mouth of the Mississippi River.
They occur all over the world and are becoming more frequent and intense with climate change. A recently developed system ranks them similar to the way hurricanes are categorized from 1 to 5, with the higher number meaning the storm lasts longer and carries more moisture.
The rating for this latest atmospheric river was a 3, while earlier ones in December and January were 4s. Last August, Pakistan suffered a Category 5 atmospheric river, which killed over 1,000 people, displaced millions, and inundated one-third of the country.
The drought in California, while not over, has eased a bit. Reservoirs in the state have been rising with all the precipitation this year. However, managers had to release water from some of them to make room for forecasted rain and melting snow.
While atmospheric rivers have brought much precipitation to California, the weather phenomenon known as La Niña, which is blamed for worsening drought in the U.S. Southwest, is now, well, gone, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
La Niña conditions bring colder water to North and South America and pushes the jet stream north. The phenomenon can lead to a more severe hurricane season in the Atlantic Ocean, but the opposite in the Pacific.
The La Niña that has just ended lasted for about 3 years, one of the longest periods on record. If El Niño does form, it could mean the continuation of wet weather in California and raises concerns for hotter global temperatures and heat waves.
El Niño and La Niña are natural occurrences, but now they take place in the context of human-induced global warming, which makes rainfall and weather patterns more extreme.
Cyclone Freddy is one for the record books, the extremely rare storm being described by meteorologists like a horror movie that never ends, is likely the longest-lasting tropical cyclone in history.
On February 6, Freddy developed off Australia. From there, it set an extremely rare course, more than 8,000 kilometers across the Indian Ocean, moving east to west, a track that has only happened twice in recent history, and both during a La Niña year.
It first made landfall in Madagascar, and then spent several days over Mozambique and Zimbabwe, bringing heavy rains and flooding. It then pulled a U-turn and headed back toward Madagascar, picking up energy from the warm waters in the channel to slam the island again, which has had 3 times its monthly average of rainfall in just a week.
But it wasn't done. On Saturday, March 11th, Freddy boomeranged and headed back toward Mozambique, which has received more than 1 year's worth of rainfall in the past month.
The Indian Ocean has warmed faster than the global average as it absorbs greenhouse gas emissions, which scientists say fuels more intense and perhaps crazy storms.
And finally, speaking of records, 100 days. That's how long a man plans to live underwater off the coast of Florida in the name of science.
Joseph Dottori, a professor at the University of South Florida, submerged 30 feet below the ocean's surface to live in an undersea lab near Key Largo in a mission called Project Neptune 100.
During his stay, he will conduct marine experiments and be the experiment to study how the human body responds to long-term isolation and extreme pressure, all while continuing to teach classes online from his undersea abode.
During the 3 months, fellow scientists will join him at the lab that consists of 2 13-foot-long tubes connected by a wet room where people go in and out of the water. The habitat can sleep 4, has a toilet, shower, and a kitchen, complete with a coffee maker.
In a video interview with the media, Dottori says the goal goes beyond medical science or breaking the current record of 73 days under the sea. He hopes to encourage preservation and protection of marine environments and inspire young people to become ocean researchers, many of whom will visit him using scuba gear on school field trips.
Dottori will need to take vitamin D given the lack of sun and will undergo routine psychological and medical tests, including blood panels and electrocardiograms, as well as stem cell measurements.
He said previous research showed that exposure to increased pressure underwater doubled the number of circulating stem cells, suggesting the potential to increase longevity and prevent diseases associated with aging.
For that reason, Dottori says he hopes to come out superhuman. You can see if he does by following along on his YouTube channel.
That's it for This Week in Water, which is sponsored today by our contributary, Kimball Worcester of California.
Kimball said, H2O Radio feeds and waters me with sustainable journalism about our world's most precious resource, that is radio worth soaking in, so take the plunge.
Thanks for listening, Kimball. See you next week.
We need to wrap things up here at the Morning Magazine. I want to thank Joel Edelstein for being here with me. And coming up next is How on Earth?